Next week marks the 200th anniversary of the groundbreaking of the Erie Canal. Construction was completed in 1825, linking Lake Erie in Buffalo with the Hudson River in Albany. The canal made it possible to move materials and goods between the Midwest and New York City, which became the biggest port and most important center for industry, trade, and finance in the country. The canal also transformed upstate New York and spurred people to move west. Joining us now is Duncan Hay, the historian of the Erie Canalway National Heritage Corridor. Welcome.
Thank you.
So construction of the canal started in Rome, New York, in July of 1817. But how long was the planning of this project, both from an engineering and a political standpoint?
Well, people have been talking about it for years. There had been early improvements to the Mohawk River navigation and across the drainage divide at Rome in the 1790s. But the dream of building a canal that went all the way from tidewater from the Atlantic to the upper Great Lakes had been percolating, you know, again since those first efforts in the 1790s, and they came to fruition. There were some explorations examining different routes around 1805. A lot of debate, and then finally the New York legislature authorized construction in the spring of 1817.
Was that the shortest possible route to get from the Hudson River out to the lakes?
Well, it was the one that involved the least change in elevation. Lake Erie is about 570 feet higher than the Atlantic, and New York is uniquely positioned. It has the only gap in the Appalachian Mountains between Georgia and Newfoundland, and so it was the only place where you could get through by going up the tidal Hudson, which actually is what goes through the Appalachian Mountain chain, and then from there up the Mohawk. And west across western New York until you get to Lockport, where you have to climb what is essentially Niagara Falls.
How difficult was it to construct the canal, which, by the way, at the very beginning was 4 feet deep and 40 feet wide? Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. And actually, the real importance was it was 28 feet wide at the bottom because the boats were about 12 feet wide and you needed space enough for them to pass, two loaded boats to pass each other. It was a very modest appearing ditch across the state, and yet it was the biggest and longest public works project that had been attempted in the U.S. up until that point. The challenges were dealing with of course lots of excavation, rock, and crossing the marshes. The center part of the state is very marshy, and so dealing with that was a problem. But it was the best alternative because anywhere else you're going up over mountains.
I see that it cost only $7 million to build, which, I mean, it's just unimaginable today. And they made it back in 10 years.
That's correct, yeah. And in fact, within that same 10-year period, the canal was choked with traffic. I mean, it was an immediate success. They started in 1817. They opened segments as they were completed, much the way you would with a modern highway project. And as each segment opened, there was immediate traffic. And when they finally opened it end-to-end in 1825, there were traffic jams from the very beginning. So in 1836, they started enlarging it. And they deepened it to 7 feet. They lengthened the lock chambers and made them wider. And most important, they put two chambers side by side at each location so that east and westbound traffic could flow uninterrupted.
And what kind of things were being transported along the Erie Canal?
The biggest thing was grain, wheat and other grains from the Midwest. The canal was originally promoted as a way of opening upstate New York, and it actually facilitated the opening of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, all those Great Lakes states that could ship their product by lake freighter to Buffalo. It was where it was transshipped to canal boats, went through the canal, was towed down the Hudson River by in large rafts by steamboats, and then loaded onto ocean-going freighters in New York Harbor.
Do you think that we would have the great Midwest cities if it weren't for the Erie Canal?
Probably not. I mean, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Duluth are all canal ports. And they were all places where the produce of the hinterland was brought to the lakefront. And they all had canals of their own. I mean, the Erie was so successful that most Midwestern states imitated it immediately following its completion.
Would you say that the state that was impacted the most, though, is New York State?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, New York, and particularly the two cities at either end of the state. I mean, New York City, when they started canal construction, New York was just one of probably a dozen Atlantic coast ports that were more or less equal. But the opening of the canal and the connection, the bringing of Midwestern produce made that natural harbor in New York City just boom. And it also brought with it all the sorts of business enterprises that are needed to support shipping, both inland commerce and maritime commerce, things like banking and insurance. And so the rise of New York as a financial center is a direct result of the construction or completion of the Erie Canal.
Do you think that it defined America in those early days?
Absolutely. You know, this was a very young nation. We had just we were a few years past the Revolution, only a few years past the War of 1812. It was a nation that was trying to sort of find its feet, and the Erie Canal became something that citizens and overseas visitors alike attached themselves to. There are lots of travelers' accounts. Charles Dickens went through the Erie Canal. The Marquis de Lafayette returned as a war hero, went through the Erie Canal even before it was completed. And they wrote home, and they wrote to popular newspapers. So this became sort of an icon of a new nation.
Was it based on anything? Did they try to copy another canal somewhere?
There certainly were canals that had been constructed before the Erie, particularly in Britain. In fact, by 1817, we were past the peak of canal construction in Britain and on the continent. So they had prototypes to work from.
So when did the use of the canal start to decline?
Well, tonnage peaked in the 1880s. By the end of the 19th century, railroads were taking a greater proportion of freight traffic. And there was a serious debate, you know, do we need this canal at all? And New York had a new governor at that time. It was Theodore Roosevelt, who had just come home as a war hero from the Spanish-American War. He was elected governor. And one of his charges was figure out what to do with the canal because it had started to be tinged with scandal of government fraud and mismanagement and various other things. And Roosevelt commissioned a panel who spent about a year and a half examining alternatives, and they came up with a very bold plan to make it vastly larger than it was, not just keep it going, not just enlarge it in increments as had been done in the 19th century, but to build something far larger. And in a way, it was a prototype for Panama. Roosevelt had moved on to the vice presidency and indeed the presidency by the time all of this got underway. But today's canal system was constructed between 1905 and 1918. It was called the Barge Canal, and it could take boats that had more than 10 times the capacity of any of their predecessors. And that canal remained in commercial service – well, is still in commercial service today, but the real peak started dropping off after 1957 when the St. Lawrence Seaway opened. And so then the monopoly that the Erie Canal had on connecting the Atlantic to the Great Lakes was taken away because ocean-going vessels could now go up the St. Lawrence and directly into the Great Lakes and around by Niagara Falls by way of the Welland Canal. So the freight traffic on the Erie dropped precipitously after 1957.
Well, what's the state of the Erie Canal now?
Well, you can still use it. The Erie itself is about 350 miles long, and you can take a boat from New York City or from here in Boston all the way to Chicago or Duluth by way of the Erie Canal. It's fully operational. It runs from May to the end of October each year.
Is there any freight on there?
There is freight, yeah. What it tends to be is stuff that's simply too large to ship by road or rail. And so 2 weeks ago, there was a big shipment of six giant tanks that had come in from China and were going to the Genesee Brewery in Rochester. And these things were simply too big to fit under the bridges or on the rail tracks. General Electric has a turbine works in Schenectady, and they ship a lot of turbines out to the big power plants in the Midwest by way of the canal on the Upper Great Lakes.
Looking back 200 years later, do you think that there's something that would have been done differently in the building of the Erie Canal, knowing what we know now?
I think probably they always looked over their shoulders and said, we should have done it bigger.
Why do you have such interest in the Erie Canal that you've made a career out of it?
Well, I grew up along it in a little village outside of Syracuse. My mother's parents ran a boat livery on the Oswego Canal. So it simply is you know, part of what I am. But I think the other thing is that it is a kind of an ongoing contributor to New York and the nation.
That's Duncan Hay, who is the historian of the Erie Canalway National Heritage Corridor, talking with us about the Erie Canal, which celebrates its 200th anniversary in July. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I've got a mule, her name is Sam, 15 miles on the Erie Canal.
And this year, the World Canals Conference will be held in Syracuse to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the Erie Canal. Photos at hereandnow.org.
Filled with lumber, coal, and hay, and we know every inch of the way from all.